International.
Welcome to a brand new episode of Why Should We Care? I am your host, Chris Tellez, here with my blood brother, as always, AJ Henderson.
Hey.
Guys, we are back with a hot sode, as always.
It has been a minute.
It's been a minute. Yeah. We had our live show 2 weeks ago. Again, we appreciate everyone who came out for that.
Thank you for that. Yeah.
We had a lot of fun.
It was a lovely evening.
Yeah. We want to thank the comics and also the band Pongo for closing it out.
Yeah, that was very nice of them.
Yeah, we had so much fun that
we're
going to do it again.
Yeah,
right.
Sometime. Mm-hmm.
Sometime. We might look at February, but we'll keep you guys posted.
Yeah, we'll let you guys will be the first to know.
It sounds like AJ does not want to do another live show.
No, I do. I just don't want to promise anything that I can't get, you know?
Well, I'll do the live show since AJ's so against it.
Well, okay.
All right. Well, you cave in fast, my friend.
I didn't know how to rebuttal, and I was just like, I'm just going to drop it.
Well, again, that was a lot of fun. We want to say Happy New Year. How was your New Year, AJ?
What did you do? I slept. I was tired.
Really?
I've been working really hard. Yeah.
You slept in from 2017 to 2018.
I did. Yeah. These little celebrations mean nothing to me.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's.
That's kind of sad.
No. It's the first thing you said. It's cool.
Okay. What about Christmas? What'd you do on Christmas?
On Christmas, I ate a big lasagna with you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Man, it's crazy because I completely forgot about that. I forgot about it because it's like every other day.
Now, that one is kind of sad, actually.
Really? I had a good time this Christmas.
I liked it. I liked how understated it was, and it was a good lasagna. But, yeah, I think
fuck you. Now I know you think it was sad. I was having a good time.
I'm just saying, perception, man. I think if somebody was on the outside looking in, it'd be like, look at those two dudes just eating a big old lasagna.
Well, you guys tell us if you think it's sad or if you think it's rad. Drop us a tweet or get on Facebook.
Like to know what you guys think of
this. Hey, I think the fact that you guys had a big lasagna together on Christmas is rad.
Yeah,
That's the kind of tweet I want to see.
Yeah, There was soda.
Okay.
And garlic bread.
Yeah, we bought a pie. Chocolate pie.
Pie, yeah.
We watched some TV. We're like two old single men that live together.
Yeah, right? I was starting off on the rad side, and as that conversation kept going, it got sadder and sadder.
What'd I tell you about shutting your mouth until we're done talking?
I don't listen well.
I know. As proven.
All right.
We want to thank everyone for subscribing and listening to the podcast. Spread the word. We are a very word of mouth podcast. You could go listen, subscribe, review. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever podcast can be found.
Yeah, if you could like put it on a tape and then trade those, that would be cool.
What?
Yeah, just put our podcast on a little tape, like a cassette.
Who has a tape player?
Some people.
Yeah, not the kind of people I want listening to this podcast.
Wow. I don't know if we want to like...
Do you think we just lost some people?
Let's not alienate
those
guys.
You think anyone's listening to this on tape right now?
Not yet, they're not.
Never.
I suggested it, so like the little plant is in there now.
We don't cross over well on tape. I know it. I've done the studies. I've done the research. Not a tape podcast.
Well, then don't do that, guys.
Yeah, if you are listening to us on tape, stop it right now and kill yourself.
Whoa!
This is where we're going right now. In 2018, we're going really extreme with this. Guys, we have, like I said, a hot show today. We've been talking about it for a year. We finally worked it out with his lawyer. We've got him here. The Lizard Man, Eric Sprague, is on the show today.
Hey, man.
I don't know what my lawyer's doing. I represent myself. I have no clue how this happened.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we made it work,
man.
We
talked to some guy who represents you.
You're a hard guy.
Oh, that guy. Oh, jeez.
You're a hard lizard to get a hold of, and I'm glad we were able to work it out.
I'm happy to be here.
Hell yeah. And your topic you brought on today, it looks like one that you'll be very familiar with, obviously. It's a circus and sideshow and why people should care about it or have an interest in it, right?
Right. There you go. I mean, when you first told me about the podcast, I took the title a little bit too broadly. Like, I was supposed to be like, I thought it was like, you know, why should we care about anything type of thing? And then you're like, what do I care about? Cool. I mean, I don't know. I don't believe that you can really, you know, necessarily convince someone to care about something you care. I don't think it's something you should do.
That's true. In the year we've done it, I can't think of one thing I've gotten into hard.
Well, I mean, I look at it like, if the only things that I would ever advocate someone caring about are things that affect them directly. So, you know, you're probably not going to be affected directly, but I'm going to make the case that you're indirectly affected by circus and sideshow. But yeah, if it doesn't touch your daily life, like in a very tangible way, then why would you give a fuck?
Yeah. Well, whenever we were standing out there and you said, I'm going to talk about circus and sideshow, I looked at you and I was like, of course you are. Right? Yeah, this makes this is perfect. All right. So let's get started. I mean, tell us about a little bit more about it that people might not know. Maybe some, I'll let you take it.
You know, if you want to make a case for Circus and Sideshow historically, there's a lot of things that, you know, do affect your daily life now that came from Circus and Sideshow. I think one of the most famous examples is the Army and various armed forces learning and studying for troop movement and heavy equipment movement, how to get around. Because especially when the First and Second World Wars came around, the people that had experience moving huge fucking production, setting up tents, you know, basically everything really quick, things that a military needs to do, the circus had done that. So they drew very heavily upon those skills. So there's something that, you know, affects institutionally the way that we do stuff today that comes from it. And if you know that history, you can kind of see the process of where it came from.
Yeah, zoned out a little bit. I can't believe you're here, and I can't believe I'm looking at you right now.
Yeah, a lot to take in right now.
What kind of things that the Army learned from circus and sideshow? I mean, you probably just said it, like, but I just wasn't kidding about the zone out.
Put it down into one word for you: logistics.
Logistics. Okay.
Modern logistics for business. You know, like I said, military troop movements, a lot of stuff like that. Was taken and modeled after circuses and how they got themselves around the country and around the world. So that's one historical hook.
That's also a hot thing to whisper to your date if you're ever at the circus with her.
Yeah. Hey, baby, did you know that this was the model for future business logistics and troop movements?
She goes,
everyone knows that.
You know.
Maybe I will stick around.
And this one, I mean, it feels almost hack and cliche for me to say it, but Circus and Sideshow is, at its base level, inspirational entertainment. One of the pitches that has always been around for doing these stunts and these different things that you see done in Circus and Sideshow is that it proves that things you thought were impossible are possible, that most limits are fictional. And this is a way that a lot of performers, including myself, over the years have presented shows to audiences saying, like, look, you didn't believe it was possible for a man to get set on fire and shove a sword down his throat, but I just showed you that it was. Now, what else in your life do you believe is impossible that isn't? You know, go out there and do it. And, you know, for some people, I'm kind of a cynic, but I understand that for some people that can be inspiring. It can be a useful, positive thing in their life.
Yeah.
You know, for an entertainment industry, though, I think, and this is what we talked about a little bit before we get on, because it relates to some of what I'm doing overseas, doing like historical recreation shows and just more traditional format, is that the circus and the sideshow is the true home and birthplace of variety entertainment. You think about what you go to a circus, you can see musical acts, you can see juggling, you can see tumbling, you can see dancing, sword swallowing. You can see all of these things in circuses and sideshows. And, you know, that's where you really, you know, if you lose that, you're losing the birthplace of a lot of great entertainers. You trace back a lot of our great actors and performers that go back to vaudeville, and vaudeville came out of the circus and the sideshows. Mm-hmm. You know, it all goes back to having this sort of variety catch-all place for entertainment to be there. And it's live entertainment. And one of the things I've always had to fight for in my career is getting people to not watch a video or look at a picture and think they'd already seen it. This is a sort of entertainment. You feel the heat. You smell the torch. You smell the burning hair when you get set on fire. You know, it's a very intimate setting like that. And if you've never had it, I mean, this is what inspired me to get into this sort of genre and type. And at least I knew I was always going to do live performance, because nothing else compares. Everything else is a pale imitation to being there, breathing the same air as the performer as they do what they do.
Yeah. Do you think if there was a way for a guy to light himself on fire, but fake light himself on fire, he would do it?
Oh, absolutely. Look, there's always going to be somebody who's going to take the easy way out. And it comes up a lot in Circus and Sideshow, because over the history of, you know, entertainment, magicians have very often figured out ways to do fake versions of things that people have done for real.
Is that what they call illusions?
Exactly.
Now, do you do any illusions in your act? Is that all 100% real?
I never...
I've seen you do some stuff, right. And I'm like, that ain't no illusion. I saw what I just saw.
And that's the other thing.
Shook.
Live. I love magic. I'm very much a magic nerd in my personal life. I'm friends with a lot of magicians, but I never perform magic for that very reason, that I don't want to muddy the waters. Mm-hmm. When you see my show, you know that everything you're seeing, whether it's a modification I've made to my body or something I'm doing with my body, it's always 100% real.
When you barely started the modifications to the body at the tender age of 4, as I read on Wikipedia.
Is that what Wikipedia says?
Yeah, that's what I put in
Did
there.
Did you just edit it?
Yeah. Was that, when you started doing it, was it with the intent of getting involved in the circus business?
That was sort of the pipe dream. Mm-hmm. You know, when I initially had the idea of kind of transforming my body through body modification processes, it was a sort of a development of an idea that I've been working with my entire life, you know, all of 18 years at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, as an artist, but I'd been very much into costuming, body painting, and performance. Mm-hmm. And this was a way to make it permanent, which was important to me. Now, in my head, a lot of my inspiration came from people like the Great Omi and Historical Circus and Sideshow, but I never thought it was going to come back around as it did. I got very lucky, right place, right time. And I mean, I owe pretty much 99% of any success I've had to that lucky being in that right moment.
What was the right moment?
But the early 90s when Sideshow, okay. when Sideshow.
So you're saying you're walking around in Walmart and well, you know, like, hey, that guy.
I think, you know, I think what it was for me is that, you know, I had this idea, but I wasn't going through it. It was purely conceptual for 3 years, which was during the time that I kind of worked out the design, how exactly I would do it. But I didn't pull the trigger until about January of 1994 and start getting tattooed, because it wasn't until that point that I saw, like, oh, this isn't going to be something that I'm going to have to hide, like keep, you know, just tattooing and stop at my face, because I never wanted to do that. But I did see, I was like, hey, there's a chance, it's a slim chance, but there's a chance I can make this work, because a lot of the stuff that was my private hobby, beds of nails, swallowing swords, things like that,
classics.
had suddenly become viable entertainment again. I was like, holy shit, I can get, I did bed of nails as a performance art piece as an undergrad student. And, you know, people are like, ooh, whatever. But I never thought.
Bed of nails, do you lay on them too, right?
I lay on them, let people walk on me, jump on me, things
Whoa,
like that.
Oh, dude, how do you not get murdered?
How
do you not die?
I mean, as you know, everybody on the internet will tell you, it's physics, it's physics, it's physics. So I used to go out of my way to prove that it wasn't just physics, that it is technique as well. You have to be able to convince yourself. The thing is, when somebody's on top of you, the one that gets hardest, because you have to contract your abs to keep from crushing your guts, but you also have to relax your back, because when you tense up, if you get too tense, that's when the nails will actually start poking into you.
Have you ever got anybody lay on top of you that's actively trying to shove you into the nails?
I've had people do that. I had a woman who was an acrobat do handstand push-ups on me.
Okay.
She had one hand. Yeah, I've had
unprompted. Nobody asked her to do that.
What if
she accidentally murdered you right now?
That's the circus, man.
Yeah, you die.
That's how it goes.
There's a great old circus proverb which goes, "If you wake up and feel no pain, be at peace, for you are dead."
Wait, this, if you what?
If you wake up and feel no pain, be at peace, for you are dead.
Oh, so you like the pain of it, all right?
No, it's not that, you know, I mean, some people do like the pain, but I would think if you talk to a lot of performers, at least, you know, my friends I know that do, you know, circus and sideshow, they would say that they don't like the pain, but they like proving to themselves that they can beat the pain, that they can overcome it. And also, we often say, if that's what I have to do to entertain you, that's a fair exchange. Bought a ticket, I will bleed for you.
Has anything ever, like, you're doing, like, for example, I saw you do the power drill through the nose. Mm-hmm. Has anything ever in front of an audience, like, you're doing it, but it goes wrong, and you're like,
oh, accidents, yeah. I've had lots of, I think probably the two biggest accidents I've had, especially in terms of people's response to them, was number one, I was breathing fireballs at a motorcycle rally. at about midnight, so I was blackout drunk, so it wasn't a good idea. Spent all day in a stripper tent doing shots at Jack Daniels with the Hells Angels, and now I'm standing on a speedway course with a torch and a jug of fuel.
He's just like, Jesus Christ, what am I doing?
Well, and, you know, in the moment, I was like, this is the greatest moment of my life. You know, thousands of people are watching and cheering. I'm doing, and as I'm blowing it, because I'm drunk and it's stupid, and I shouldn't be doing it, I'm not paying attention to the wind, and one of the fireballs got turned around and it blew back, but fortunately it did a U and it hit half of my face.
Whoa,
and but from the audience point of view, I was that matchstick guy from the barbecue commercial with a flame for a head, because they couldn't I've got pictures that people took from the stands where you can't see my head.
It's just awful.
Yeah, it's just there. And then when the fireball, you know, quickly dissipates like a flash, half of my face is still on fire.
Oh my God.
My old assistant and this guy who's an artist, he's known as the ice cream man from hell. He drives an ice cream truck and sells t-shirts out of it, does it with an airbrush and all this shit. And ice cream man from hell is about 6'5", 300 pounds. My old assistant was about 6'4", at least 280. They come running out because they both realize, oh, I'm on fire. And my assistant was all supposed to have a towel ready. He was drunk too. We didn't
have
that.
Please tell me they put that flame out with ice cream.
My assistant had my t-shirt in his hand, but he's holding it like a fist, and he's trying to swat out the flames, and he's literally punching me in the face, and I'm trying to get away from the punches because I'm not burning the bat. It is going out on its own, but then Jimmy, ice cream, he grabs my shoulders because he thinks that I'm not getting put out fast enough, so I'm being held and punched in the face by two guys who think they're just doing the best thing in the world for me, saving my life.
Two men assaulting that lizard man. Yeah.
The next day I was like two-faced. I had blisters all over like half of my face all day. It was pretty, I woke up stuck to my pillow in my tent. You know.
What's your favorite kind of like circus gigs to do? Like some of your most memorable ones, if you can recall.
Yeah, I mean, the ones that I really love doing now is the stuff that I'm doing at like fringe festivals overseas. I've been doing the Adelaide Fringe Festival for coming up this February, but it'd be the 7th year. And we do a modern show, but we do it in a traditional format, which means that I start off outside the tent as a bally talker, barker, most people call it. And I'm just talking to the crowd. I'm literally trying to hypnotize people into buying tickets with the sound of my voice, telling them the show's coming up. Once I get a big enough crowd, we call it a tip, out there paying attention to me, then we try to move them over to the ticket box to buy their tickets. It's called turning the tip. And so when you turn the tip, it's how many of the people that you were able to gather in front of you actually buy the tickets. You know, if you get, oh, that's a good turn, that means almost everybody went and bought a ticket. Once we get them going inside the tent, I have another talker that will relieve me, and I will run around the back, come inside, welcome everybody onto the stage, and introduce the first act. I'll do an act probably in the middle or at the end, and they'll get to see three acts, about 5 to 7 minutes. So that's the old traditional format. But we're doing modern acts for them. You know, we do classics like Swordsline, but we try to give it more of a sketchy modern presentation.
Yeah.
The show will last about 20 minutes, and then the last performer will give everybody a little speech about telling their friends and the other stuff, because we change up the cast, send them out. And as they go out, I will be back on the box outside saying, look at these people as they come out, using them to gather attention for the next show. And it immediately repeats. Mm-hmm. We'll do two or three shows an hour, and we'll operate on a good Saturday. We will probably do anywhere from 15 to 18 shows in a day.
Damn.
And we just do it all day
long.
Those
are your favorite ones to do?
I love doing that, because that to me is like, I told one of my friends down there one time, I said, this is Sideshow Valhalla. And I love it. Yeah, it's like, you know, in Valhalla is a war. You wake up every day and go into glorious battle, and then you feast at the end. Well, at the Fringe Fest, running a grind show like that, every day I go out and do glorious shows for glorious people all day long. At the end, I have a few beers with my buddies, and I go pass out. When I wake up, I do it all over again.
That's awesome.
And they mostly do that overseas?
Well, I mean, that format is the classic format. So there are people trying to do those shows, you know, all over the world. And it's an American format. That's the other thing about, you know, if I can ring the patriotism bell on anybody, circus and sideshow is an American folk art. It has its own form. There's European circus and American circus. And sideshow, especially as it grew out of it and then out of the dime museums, is a purely American art form that we've now exported.
Has the circus sideshow industry been affected negatively or positively with the internet? Like, do people get out as much anymore?
This is weird, because I just had a conversation about this yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, my own success, I owe a lot of my own success to being a nerd who was on the internet. Like, I had a webpage before Red Lobster. Yeah. And so when TV
is that a different guy?
That's no. But
the restaurant
Black Scorpion is a local Austin guy. He's a good friend of mine.
Black Scorpion,
great guy.
Does he have his hands on? His
hands and feet are both well, like lobster, scorpion claws. No, he has three fingers and two fingers and a thumb on each hand, and his feet are the same.
So he got his hands like perfectly like surgically.
Oh no, he's born that way.
Okay.
He's born. He's natural born. I guess is you know how some people kind of different. Like I'm a freak, he's a freak, but I'm a self-made freak. I'm what's known academically as a self-made freak, and he's what's known as a born freak.
And he wouldn't get mad if you say that?
No, not at all. Okay. No, that's I've worked with him at Coney Island. Like I say, he's Austin local guy. Like he's a good friend.
Yeah, because I'm gonna reach out to him and get him on the podcast.
He for a little while he was doing stand-up, like because he has this great glass walking routine. Mm-hmm. That is basically a send-up of Die Hard
the movie?
Yeah, Die Hard. The scene in Die Hard. Yeah, Williams. But for everybody whose favorite Christmas movie is Die Hard, you know the scene that would apply, right? He does this great parody of that scene as his glass walking act. And it's hilarious.
Oh my God. It's real glass?
Yeah, it's real glass. And it has like the double whammy because you're laughing at the jokes while he's doing it like that. And even though you see his hands, most people don't expect his feet to be like that as well. So he's sitting down, taking off his shoes, doing lines from the movie and setting up the whole big, you know,
and his feet are like that too.
And he pulls off his shoes and people are like, holy shit, look at his feet. And then, you know, he gets up and he starts walking across the glass and people are like, oh my God, look at his feet. Look at him walking on glass. What the hell is going on? And then he starts to hit you with the routine has like a triple punchline.
Yeah.
And then it's like, and they go from like laughing to like, oh my God, what's happening, to laughing their asses off again. It's great. It's one of my favorite.
I noticed that about your routine. You have like killer jokes like while you're doing crazy shit on stage. Like, has anybody ever like just straight up laughed then vomited during your routine then gone back to laughing?
One of my favorite things about what I do and my career thus far is I believe that there are probably only a couple other people in the world that can say they've gotten vomits and standing ovations and cheers from the same people. Like, I've got a video of me doing my old stomach pumping act on stage in Portland before one of the Jägermeister Music Tour shows, and this girl in the front row is like screaming her head off, cheering for her. But then when the big moment comes, it just hits you. You literally see it hit her where this big glob goes through the pump, and then I drink it back down. Right? And yeah, no. Exactly. See, just hearing it did that to you. So she starts puking over the barricade, and I had the camera. I was like, check it out, we got a puke. I get the whole crowd looking. I'm like, we're not gonna make fun of it. It's cool, man. I understand. It gets you like. And once she was done puking, she was immediately like, horns back up, like fuck yeah, like awesome. High five me as I'm going off the stage. I'm like, how many people can say they can do that to a person with their act? You know, I cause people. I create physical reactions in people with what I do.
My God, have you ever gotten a fight with anyone after the show? Come on, let's get to it.
Yeah, I almost got into a fight during a show.
Did they call you Lizard Man? Like, Lizard Man.
No, it's just, you know, it's your standard drunk asshole kind of walking up to the stage like, I don't believe this shit. And as they get closer and closer and you kind of give them the warning, you're like, dude, I'm really in danger here already. So if you make me think that you're going to increase the level of danger, I'm just going to stop what I'm doing and hurt you first.
That
shuts a lot of them down too. It also helps that, you know, like my big finale for a lot of shows is having a concrete block smashed over my groin. Which means I always have a sledgehammer with me on stage. So sometimes when I see somebody fucking around in the audience, I just pick up the sledgehammer and hold it while I go on with the show normally, but holding a sledgehammer. And yeah, hecklers start to go, I don't think I want to say my funny shit anymore. Yeah,
this thing's going to my crotch either way. But where it goes beforehand is your call. Huh?
It's seen my nuts. It can see your face.
It's like three insults in one. Have you ever accidentally smashed your balls pretty hard like with that sledgehammer? Is that like a thing where like, that's the one I make sure goes right all the time?
That stunt is one where, yeah, I don't want to fuck up, but the... The thing about that one is
no Jaeger before this one.
That one often hurts me even when it goes right, but not in the way people think. Like normally I am able to time the body relaxation with the impact and let the force go through me, and I'm usually okay. Like, it feels like, you know, I got a light, like, backhanded slap in the locker room type of thing.
Yeah.
But but what happens it's not pleasant, but you can recover pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know, what happens to me almost every time that I can't escape is the edges of that goddamn block get driven into my thighs. So after a long tour, the insides of both my thighs are just cut to hell with concrete cuts.
They don't realize how much pain you're putting yourself for these days. I'm like,
yeah, we're going to retire that one?
You know, I took a while off from doing it because a friend of mine who I actually helped get into Sideshow came up with a version of it, and I had been doing it for so long, I felt like maybe I needed to
build
a new finale.
Yeah.
And yeah, and because he and I, you know, end up in a lot of the same places, you know, not necessarily at the same time, but like year after year, I'm like, you know, you go do that act, because he came up with a brilliant idea that, you know, really made it he and his show partner's own sketch, and I'm a fan of their version of the act.
Oh, there you go.
If you travel like the whole world, doing your routine, are there parts, what parts of the world do you find like are the funnest to play? Or is there a difference? They react the same everywhere.
There's definitely differences. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, but even in the same place, there's differences from audience to audience, show to show. I always say the best place, or my favorite place, is the place that's making me the most money. So right now that's Australia. So Australia, congratulations, you are the best place in the world to perform.
That's where you're going next.
Yeah, you know. But there are a lot of great places to perform around the world. I feel like geography is, at a certain point, just not that relevant.
Yeah.
It's more a matter of some places suck.
You're like, they're lizards all over the world, baby.
But there's a crowd for you everywhere. Well, you know, the typical cities to knock, right, are, you know, L.A. and New York, because you get disinterested industry people who don't watch the show, why real fans are stuck outside. And that's very much a real thing. But just because there are places that suck, and there are, doesn't mean that there aren't great places around. I've done and had great shows. I think Coney Island is a fantastic venue, and I would like to see them do more than just Sideshow out there, because they've got a great stage and a great venue and a great location. Mm-hmm. You know, do more. I've played great venues in LA and had wonderful shows out there. It's a matter of, are you getting to the right place?
Right.
And you know, like, if you go somewhere and you think that somewhere sucks or that club, I'm like, maybe you were in the wrong club. Maybe you weren't promoted right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a firm believer in that it's possible to have a good show anywhere.
What about like you meet so many people doing this that have their own acts? Let's get to the drama here. Have you ever met anybody that you just can't stand their asses, or like you can't stand their act? Let's spill.
Yeah, well, here's can't stand their act. I mean, a good act is a good act. But if I can't stand you as a person, you know, I won't say that your act sucks just because I don't like you. I will be honest and say that your act is good, but the overall rating is suck because you're a horrible person. That would be, I mean, for
yeah,
me,
yeah, but who
for me, and I'm sorry, man, I'm not going to spill any new room for it.
That's
for me,
after the show.
Everybody knows for me, it's Jim fucking Rose.
Who's Jim Rose?
Jim Rose, the Jim Rose Circus in the 90s. He is the name that most people in America know as Sideshow, because he's the guy that got all the big attention, you know, touring with Nine Inch Nails and being on Lollapalooza. Yeah. And for a lot of people in the 90s, he was their first taste of Sideshow, because it had really kind of died out in a lot of ways and in most places. There was a little bit of stuff going on in the mid to late 80s in New York and some other spots, but for the most part, Sideshow and Circus Sideshow Act had been forgotten, and Jim was their reintroduction. And it's sad that they got reintroduced to it by somebody who's probably the worst possible person. There were people with a lot more depth than talent they could have run into, but he was, you know, right person, right time, or you know, right place, right time.
Have you ever got to talk to him before?
Oh, no, I worked for him.
That's
why he's the person I let. So by 1994, 95, the Jim Rose Circus is the top internationally. They are, you know, they're the opening, they're the featured act before Nine Inch Nails on their world tour. That might have been 96, but anyway, like that was the dream. That was as high as you could get in Sideshow in the 90s, and which was much higher than you could ever get before it. So when I got to work for him, when I got to join the Jim Rose Circus, it was a very, very big deal. This was sort of the, hey man, you made it, this is the big gig. And so it's like getting your dream job and then finding out that you're boss is such an asshole, you cannot enjoy it in any possible way. Right. I am literally living my dream, making enough money, in fact, making more than enough money to live off doing sideshow and getting to travel the country doing it, and I'm fucking miserable.
He's ruining it for you.
Yeah, because he's ruining it. And the thing I always say about Jim is, I'm like, look, don't take, you know, people have arguments, people have disagreements. Yes, it's very clear. We have different ways of looking at the world. But so don't take my judgment for it. Consider this. Everyone that's worked for him has quit because they, and specified that they quit because they couldn't put up with him anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When everybody else leaves, maybe he is the common factor.
Man, wow. You should call him out on Facebook. That's like a hot thing right now.
I prefer to get the best possible revenge for. I mean, look, we're all narcissistic egomaniacs. So what's the worst thing that can happen?
Not
you get
me.
you get forgotten. I mean, you know, in the circus, so I'm like the best thing in the world, in my opinion, is what's happening to him now, which is people are starting to forget him, and he's not active in performing anymore. He's irrelevant. And that's a wonderful thing. That's the best thing. And like,
I just like to imagine him like in an apartment right now, just eating a cup noodle, listening to this podcast. Like, yeah, damn, Lizard Man.
That would be great, but unfortunately, he won't get his true comeuppance because he married a French woman whose family has money and is taking care of them.
Man.
Okay, well, not this guy worst. Does sound fucking awesome, so I don't know what your problem is with him. I guess you got to know him.
You got to try living on a bus. The anecdote that I love to tell about him to illustrate why he and I didn't get along was, we would show up somewhere, we'd walk into a dressing room, and you know the dressing room food wasn't set up. There's no ice on the soda yet. Mm-hmm. So instead of going and asking someone if they could get some ice for the soda, he would make sure the dressing room door was open, wait to see someone who worked there walk by, and then start screaming really loudly about what kind of bullshit operation doesn't even have ice on the sodas yet. We are in some amateur shit. His way of doing so. Yeah. I literally, for the time I spent on tour with him, I would end up following him around apologizing.
Oh,
and even doing that, like, I went to places, you know, after I toured with him, I went on to host the Jägermeister Music Tour. I'd go back to venues, and I'm glad I did that, because they would have bad memory. People would be like, oh, he's not here with you, is he? And he's like, no, I'm hosting this tour. And he's like, yeah, that guy's a fucking asshole. You know, venue staff would say it. And I'm like, well, thank you for remembering that it wasn't me, because they always remember the green guy. And I was like, he's creating a negative vibe.
That green
vibe.
Guy was nice.
Yeah. Well, he created a negative vibe that they were going to associate. I knew they would associate with me, because they'd see me again. They'd be like, oh, I remember what last
you're
time
like
he was
watching
here.
Your own ass in the moment.
Yeah, exactly. I was playing cover my ass the whole time, because I knew I was bailing as soon as I could.
Smart move. Yeah. How about like, surely you get crazy fans. What's the craziest shit you've gotten with fans on the road or
anyway? Well, I mean, this is I know you want something lurid, so we'll get to something lurid, but the things that really get me
that's what I was fishing for.
But the things that stand out to me that are crazy is that I just can't understand what the motivation is.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a dude that created, like, he impersonated me online.
Stole your shit?
Well,
as a flattering thing.
Yeah, he didn't make fan pages. He made pages as if he was me, like in different apps. He like obscure, like social media apps, like random shit. He'd go make a Lizard Man account and talk to people as if he was me.
And but he'd use your image and everything.
Yeah, he'd use. Yeah, woo! And the only reason I found out about this was something happened where he had a crisis of conscience. And he contacted me, and he's like, hey, dude, I've been pretending to be you, and I'm really sorry. I'm a huge fan, and I didn't actually think that this... Like, it was... That's crazy. I'm like, what the fuck's going on here? Like, what? at what point did you go from thinking you were going to make this page and talk about me to having someone mistake you for me and then be like, I'm going to run with this? You know,
this got out of hand really quickly. You owe a lot of bad people money.
I'm like, exactly. I'm waiting for that one. I'm like, does Tony need his money next week? What
I just
want to
tell you,
here?
Get out of Austin ASAP. If you're reading this now, it's already too late.
Yeah.
I need you to tell some angry Russians, I'm not you.
That's not lurid, but that's pretty fucking crazy.
You think you've inspired anyone to go green or like
I've had a number of people, you know, tell me that I was their inspiration, they liked it. You know, a lot of people that saw me when Ripley's, you know, that Ripley show came out in 2000s were kids. And I mean, it's very true. You know, it's kind of how I ended up that way. I grew up on the old Ripley's with Jack Palance, and that's incredible, and like, you know, 80s variety stuff. You know, it got me at the right age, and I was influenced. Well, it turns out there were a lot of people the right age, the right moment watching when I was on TV, and I influenced them.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, damn, that's a trip for you then, right?
Like, oh, yeah, it's wild. I always get it when they're like, man, I loved watching you on Ripley's when I was a kid. And I'm like, I get it. I'm old. What the fuck?
But with this, you can't even tell how old you are. You're 15.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting here. I have no idea.
But it's a weird thing, too. Like, that happening was what finally, like, in my mind, I never really understood it, but the idea of, like, how age differences don't matter as you get older. I'm like, oh, yeah, you were 12. But now you're 25. That's only 13 years.
Yeah.
For you, that's half your life. But for me, that is just like, that's not that long ago.
Do you know how old you are in lizard years? And would you reveal that?
It would depend on what type of lizard.
Let's go iguana.
I don't know for iguana.
Komodo dragon?
Komodo dragon is one of my favorites, but I'm not sure about their lifespan. My absolute favorite reptile is from New Zealand. It's the tuatara.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even leave its juvenile stage until it's 65 years old.
No kidding.
So it's
so you're 65 years
old. I'm 45, so that's why I like to say I'm still a kid in lizard.
I wouldn't even think you were 45. Yeah.
Well, the thing about tuataras is they're sometimes called living fossils too. They're one of those animals that they have a third eye that's visible until it closes over as they develop.
That's
rad. It's that Norse sense. They're a wild animal, and they're sometimes called a living fossil. And
that is a rad animal.
It's and they're only found in these. They're going extinct in New Zealand, but they're an incredible little animal.
Like, you have a perfectly bald head.
You know what the irony of that is? I am the only male in my entire family to make it past 30 without going bald. I'm the only one that doesn't want hair, and I have to shave my head every day.
Your hair still grows out right now, and you
completely
just
like you can feel the stubble right there. My hairline is still right up here.
Have you ever thought about just growing it out again and just
I've done it a couple of times, and at this point I can't even let it get as long as yours without it driving me nuts, because I've been shaving my head since I was 20.
You're just so used to it. I was wondering if you had anything to
I did mohawks for a while, and that's why I tattooed one on.
Yeah, that was good. That looks good.
Did you ever have a rough patch where you grew out the beard?
I love growing out my beard because I get a good nice solid beard. You might remember this from when I had my giant chops.
Yeah,
and I would braid them and hang down. Yeah, and the thing that I decided was it affects my work, because a lot of like print and TV, something like that, they want the clean shaven, quote unquote, classic lizard man. They don't want the sideburns or any of that nonsense.
If anybody came up to you and said, we want you in this actor show, and then they just said, but we want to go all nude. Now, is everything green, lizard? What could you say to that? Are your balls green is what I'm asking.
My balls are not green. No, the way that I like to respond to that general question is, everything is modified, but everything is not green.
Yeah. Right. And then they go, what? And you go, my dick is flesh colored is what I'm saying. Yeah, white.
I mean, I used to have a bit about it where I would talk about it. I was like, look, it's not that you guessed wrong. It's that you falsely assumed that what was here was an indication of what was here. Yep. And like, does that mean, for instance, ma'am, that I should assume yours is colored or crimped or dyed?
What if you meant like that dude who didn't get all green? He was like, well, the only thing green on me is my dick and balls.
I actually, from doing, working for the old BME website, I used to write articles on body modification for it, and, knew the founders and the owners for a while. So I got to see a lot of like the submission stuff that would come in, and a lot of the heavier stuff. And I don't know who he is, but there was a dude who sent in pictures, and literally the only thing he had done to his entire body was tattoo his cock and balls completely solid black and then pierce and stretch the shit out of everything. It was like this weird black sausage package with just rings to it, because
What is he trying to be?
Well, I think he was the assumption, because he didn't send any explanation or anything with it. Like a lot of people would send pictures and be like, "This is like we had people for the erotic portion of the site that would be like, we're a pierced couple and we like to play like this and blah blah blah." We get people who are like, just like there's one dude who liked to masturbate by setting his dick on fire. He would put lighter fluid on it and then beat it out.
That's one way.
As he beat off.
You got to open your mind on that one. But that's pretty cool.
And we had people talking about like why they did it, their fetishes, their background history. This dude was just straight up sent in pictures, and their theory, because the piercings weren't done they, at least some of them obviously weren't done professionally, or at least weren't done by a good professional, because they were kind of scattered all over, is that it was probably basically just a fetish for him to have the pain. It was probably a sensation, because what he had done is, like we said, tattooed his genitals completely and then just started piercing it as much as he could.
Wow.
Talking about literally dozens of just little rings all through it. So it had to be, you know, well, it doesn't have to be, but you would assume probably a fetish deal.
What was the, for you, what was the most painful mod you did? But
The single most painful thing I've ever done voluntarily was get my implants.
Which ones?
That's what I figured.
You meant.
Yeah, because it's the only time I've hallucinated and vomited from pain.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
6 hours without anesthetic, just all I could do, just breathe and focus and get this done.
Dude, then you were like, perfect.
Yeah. And it's paid off.
Yeah, it was like,
they look fucking off.
Yeah, well, at the time, I mean, it was, you know, still fairly new. Like, I wasn't worried that something horrible was going to happen, but there really was that sort of practice. Like, there wasn't a lot of prior research done. Or like prior cases done, I should say. There's a lot of research done before we did it.
Well, I mean, you don't see people invest in themselves that like that often. That's fucking great.
Well, the best investment I made in myself, though, was ass implants,
and there's my ass still looks really small. I think I got the smallest implants, and I'm realizing how big I was.
Right. And I just had laser eye surgery.
Oh yeah,
and now I'm like,
the most practical one.
Here's the thing: it's like, why the fuck was that the last thing I did?
It's
amazing.
See. Now you can see how better your implants look.
Yeah,
right. Damn, they do look tight.
Like, fuck, I look good from a distance because I can see me now.
What is it like on a typical day? Like, if you just go to HEB and shit, like, are people, just feel people look at you, you're like, what's up? Oh, yeah.
The thing about it is that there's the, and this is why, like, when TV shows used to come and, like, want to do, like, a day in the life of the lizard man when the reality TV bullshit, and I always hated it because I knew it wasn't going to work. And that's because if we go to the grocery store, I have to go to the grocery store at least every week. These people already fucking know me.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking for the, holy shit, what is that? And I'm like, these people know me. They're my neighbors. This is the store I shop at all the time. We got to go somewhere else if you want surprise. But they don't get the, but we want you in your home environment. I'm like, well, then my home environment is where people are used to seeing Lizard Man.
It'd be boring.
What was the, didn't the guy who used to play Superman host Ripley's, believe it or not?
Yeah, Dean Cain. Yep.
Did you get to meet him?
Nah, all of his stuff was just, he never left the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, they eventually in later seasons had a, like a field correspondent time stuff. But yeah, he was all in studio and, as far as I know, never came into anybody really.
One. Doesn't sound so super to me.
Yeah. No. I was always sort of annoyed by that choice. I don't have anything against him personally.
He probably wasn't interested in it until he got the gig, right?
Well, that's the thing, is that there was no passion about it coming out of him, and there are so many people that could have been great hosts who would actually have a connection to it.
I don't think he has passion, though. Like,
I don't know enough about him to shit on him in any other than sort of like in that particular setting.
Let's do it anyway.
All right, let's do it anyway. Yeah, I mean, basically, fuck him. What's he?
You know? I think he's a Trump supporter anyway.
So. He is. He's on Fox and Friends all the time.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, definitely fuck that guy.
What about what was I going to say? I might be butchering the name, but the Ringling
Brothers Barnum and Bailey
Circus?
Is
that a thing anymore? Or did they?
Well, this is the sort of the point of
that, like, was the biggest one from my whole childhood.
Right, that is the brand name, and sort of that's, you know, the reason it has that long name, right, is because it's a bunch of circuses that basically got bought and put together to survive. They had to, you know, there was only room for so many circuses in the country, and there were others that are still active, you know, Big Apple Circus and some other, but yeah, Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey, that's the name, that is the biggest circus. So
they were the big mainstream one, right?
Like, yeah, well, up until even just a couple of years ago, they were running three different units. They had a red unit, a blue unit, and a gold unit that would be out traveling around the country, and they're three different shows. And I mean, it's just right there. You think about the scope of this operation. Now they don't do tents anymore. I mean, every now and then a special event, but like here in Austin they would play at the Irwin Center. You know, and so they're playing stadiums and stuff, but they still have to, you know, cart in, you know, animals, props, giant trapeze apparatus, all this. It's expensive. So it's funny where a lot of people saw the taking the elephants out of the show as an animal rights issue and victory like that. If you like really look into it hard, it's a financial decision. You know how expensive it is to cart fucking elephants around the country in trains and walk them and care. And the thing about it too is, like, despite what you hear from the activists and sort of that slanted stuff, I'm like, I have a very good friend who was a veterinarian for the circus. I have tons of friends who have been, that were clowns and other performers that worked there. And, you know, I've always loved that they called them American elephants because they were born and raised in America. They said that these are, when people would ask if they're, you know, Indian, Asian, like, no, they're American elephants.
Yeah.
And they do so much for the president. Their facility in Florida is amazing. It's like, yeah, it's like they didn't take them out because it was better for the elephant's health. They took them out of the show because it's fucking expensive.
Right.
And then they announced that they were closing a year later. I believe right now there is still some process, like somebody else bought the rights to the name, or there was supposed to be an offer made. Mm. And I think that right now that's where it's at. Like, it's there is no Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey currently on the road.
Yeah.
But I think the idea is that there's going to be some restructuring that'll come out again. But I'm pulling vague memories out. Yeah. Like, I've also had a lot of, like, friends that worked in their band that are now traveling around, you know, some of whom would go back in a heartbeat given the opportunity, and others that are like, well, you know, that was that chapter of my life and now I'm moving on.
Yeah. Man, would you ever do that circus? I mean, they're like family, right?
Absolutely. So. When you get,
but you could PG up your act.
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, I do. Well, because I do Ripley's, I always have a PG friendly.
I've only seen act. R version.
Yeah, you've only seen the I can get away with anything version.
Yeah, yeah.
And I even then, I didn't take it that
hammer
far.
To the nuts.
That's the you saw me get hit in the nuts, but I didn't actually pull my dick out, so you didn't see the really.
That's why I asked the question today. Green or not. I was so close to finding out that.
I mean, I would. I actually considered for a while having the word yes tattooed on my dick because people would shout at me from the audience, "Is your dick tattooed?" And I just wanted to be like, just one time, I'll just fucking whip it out and it'll say yes on it.
What does that say? You should have got laser eye surgery. Yeah,
like, I can't read that. I'd be like, come closer, bitch. I'll put it in your mouth.
Oh my God. All right. Well, that is our time.
There you go. Hey, it seems like if you did that, it'd be even harder to read.
One of the old jokes was, I used to say, like, no, my dick isn't tattooed, but there's a tattoo right above it. But if you want to see it, you have to get down on your knees real close and for some reason open your mouth.
That person would have to listen for a long time to get that insult into their face.
I don't. If I'm insulting someone, I don't give a shit if they get the insult.
Man.
Fuck you. I'm insulting you.
So it gets sometimes it could get wild at your shows where you just. Are there any YouTube videos just floating around of Lizard Man snaps on fan?
Oh, I'm sure just there are. Yelling at me. My buddy Mossy that used to travel with me on the Jaeger tour used to like actively try to get me like drunk and irritated about something before I'd go on stage because he loved it when I was angry and hostile with the audience. And I think, I don't know if it's on YouTube, but I know that he has a video of it where this woman, and she was like 20 feet back from the front of the stage, is yelling and screaming as I'm trying to bring up our first band of the night, until finally it ends up in this bizarre moment where I'm pantomiming, throwing my dick like a fire hose out to the crowd. And I got the people in front of her so pissed off. I was like, everybody help me out with this. I go, I need you to crowd surf my dick back to that fucking bitch and slap her in the face with it. And so a bunch of people put up their hands like they were crowd surfing my dick back there.
What's going on? Like, what's happening?
Yeah, and of course, she's still just screaming, fuck you. And then I had my joke with the audience crowd surfing my imaginary dick. And I was like, okay, fuck her. You guys have a good time. Bring on the band. There we go.
That one person.
And you do stand-up comedy as well, as I've seen you over the years out and about.
Yep.
Like, but whenever you're doing stand-up, I remember talking to you outside of Coal Town one time, and I was like, why don't you go by Lizard Man when you stand up? And you say you go by Eric Sprague because you don't want people to show up thinking you're doing your Lizard Man act.
Right.
Have you ever been just in the middle of something you've written and somebody was like, what the hell's going on? Put a sword in your mouth.
Well, I mean, the thing about that is too, is that I know that it's the elephant in the room every time I step on stage, so inevitably, even though I'm kind of sick of it, it's obligatory. I have to address what I am when I walk on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would rather do that, and I don't think it's quite as much of an issue as I thought it was going to be. But in my mind, it's just I have a lot of personal standards that, I mean, look, it's just I made this rule for myself. It doesn't mean that it's right or wrong, but I adhere to it. And for me, it was as a matter of principle. I don't want you to think that you're getting something that you're not.
Yeah.
And there's an established, like, at when I first started going out and doing stand-up in clubs, because to me, I always had a comedic show, and that was the idea was, it's easy to be gross in sideshow, it's hard to be funny. So I wanted to be funny, and, you know, I think that I and a few other people, and then I really sort of developed that genre of comedy sideshow, like comedy magic or whatever. And but when I started, I wasn't telling just jokes. And in my mind, I often felt that the stunts were crutches for the jokes. I wanted to have jokes that could stand on their own, whether I swallowed the sword or not. And that's, I mean, I really take that as a, it means a lot to me when you say that the jokes in the show were funny.
Yeah, because, I enjoyed it.
I mean, for me, that's what I care. That's my pride. That's where I live and breathe. Is, was I really funny, or was it just that you were so impressed with the stupid stunt that I did?
Yeah,
so
the Altercation Festival was the first time I actually saw you got to do your act, and like I always kind of knew, like, okay, he does this kind of stuff, but like the jokes you were making were really fun. I didn't expect that, and I was like, oh, this guy has perfected the art. once you took the drill out of your face, and you said, I just skull fucked myself. I was like, this man's got it down. He's a professional. Because I was laughing. That was the perfect thing to say.
One of the things that I really had to learn and had to be, you know, humbled by when I started trying to go to comedy clubs and do stand up was, you know, I came in there with overconfidence, because in my mind I'm like, I host shows for Slayer. I make 6,000 metalheads laugh. I can handle 50 people in a fucking coffee shop, you know?
That's right.
You know, I was just, but then I found out, I'm like, it's a lot different talking to 50 people in a coffee shop than it is 6,000 people in a fucking amphitheater.
Drunk and just
sweating. Yeah, and you got to make them listen to you. And so...
Like, so when you're bzzz, yeah, just a pause, you hear a guy going, I'll take a mocha. Yeah, like, just ordering a drink in the back.
And it's my sideshow act. Like, you saw me doing sideshow and doing jokes that I've been refining for 20 years. But my club stand-up act lags behind because I've only been doing, quote-unquote, pure stand-up for about 8 or 9. And so I haven't refined my stand-up as much as I've refined sideshow. You know, my timing with the sideshow and the jokes are there and they're good because I've had that repetition. I've literally done that thousands of times. I've been able to learn where the timing is. How long do I wait as I take the drill out for, hey, I just basically skull-fucked myself, or you get, you know, where is that timing for, you know, and like, what's the right way to basically beg for applause? Be like, what else do I have to do? You know, there are, you know, the little things we do. And there are some things that in club stand-up, there are, you know, conventions that make what you do inside, something that works inside you isn't going to work there, and vice versa. I mean, the way that I do sword swallowing as a street performer versus a theater performer versus a comedy performer, those are three entirely different presentations.
Yeah.
And they each have different rules. Like, there's stuff that you should never fucking do on stage, but you should always do on the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Like, show your genitals. You should never do that on the street.
Yep.
But in a club,
you go, no, I do that on the street. That's
yeah, you see, like, if you're on the street, keep it in your pants. If you're at the Slipper Room in New York, take it out or you're not getting paid.
I have to say, like, with sideshow, I've always known it in, like, a horror context. You know, it always seems like probably pop up in scary horror movies.
Yeah.
Like Freaks, and then most recently, like, that E! True Hollywood Story with Lobster Boy.
Oh, yeah, the Grady Stiles story, which is a, you know, sort of a classic. Yeah, he was, I forget the exact details, but he basically murdered a couple of people, right?
Yeah, he was, like, pretty abusive to his family.
Oh, yeah, and he was horribly abusive to his family,
I don't know what that is at all.
Grady Stiles is a historical sideshow performer, Lobster Boy. Like, he's, you know, if you see, like, banners or images, they're usually from his time. He's sort of the classic example of ectrodactyly, the condition that he and Black Scorpion and others have. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it just turns out that, yeah, he's really famous as a sideshow personality and was also a really horrible human being.
Oh, man, I will look into that.
Have you ever been out to that retirement community
where in Florida,
the old circus performers?
And now you literally forced the name of it out of my head. I was going to be like, yeah, and it's, I did 3 seasons for Universal Studios in Orlando.
Okay.
And so, because I was going out there and spending so much time out there for those years, I would go and do visits.
It seems like the coolest bar to drink.
Alligator Girl, and she was married to, it's Giants Camp. It was Al Bingiano. Man, I'm still blanking.
Alligator Girl,
and they were an odd couple, and Giants Camp is sort of this place where a lot of performers would winter, and then a lot of older performers retired. And yeah, I'm like, my weed-addled brain is just dropping so many names and details right now. I should know this stuff right off the top of my head, and I don't. I've forgotten it.
And I was going to say, for those that are interested in checking out some circus shows and all that, like, because I'm ignorant, but I hardly hear anything about it around. It's just like I'm not in the realm, but like, how could people find out, get more involved if they want to check out a show? How often are there communities?
That's the thing. It's still a very, even though we are at the point where there's been so much growth, there's so much more than there was when I started. And I actually make this point in my show a lot of times, that there are more living, performing professional sword swallowers in the world today than any other time in recorded history. So they should be really easy to find, but no, that's still so few a number that it's very easy to miss. I mean, I think that, you know, if you go to New York City during the season, basically the summer, when Coney Island Sideshow by the Seashores is operating, and you don't go, you fucked up. I mean, if you go there, you're going to see it is New York. It's, how are you going to go to New York without Coney Island? That's the Warriors. That's everything. I mean, so many reasons to go to Brooklyn and go to Coney Island, but to go see the sideshow as well, because it's a great show. Yeah, you got to get a Coney. There's also Hell's a Poppin' Circus Sideshow is one that tours around a lot. I know they were here in Austin a few months ago. Or no, actually, shit, it's been 6 months now. It was middle of last year. Played at Grizzly Hall. You got to basically keep an eye out for it. And like I say, there are sword swallowers and performers scattered about. But as for touring shows, they're kind of few and far between. And unfortunately, it seems to have plateaued. Like, I got really lucky in being able to host a tour and go around. And that used to be kind of a standard thing. We were getting hired as MCs or, like, you know, as traditional side. We were the side show, the show on the side. We'd entertain you between the bands at, you know, Ozfest or whatever.
That's awesome.
But again, you know, the greed kicks in and everything starts getting cut. They're like, oh, we don't need big posters. We don't need extra entertainment. Let those people stand in the sun and stare at the empty stage. You know, who gives a shit what they do, because we're keeping all the money after we pay whoever the headliner is.
Hopefully that's not Slayer doing that.
No.
Slipknot has eight guys and they all need the money.
Well, I would tell you this is definitely about Slayer's definitely doing that, because Kerry was, and still is, one of my biggest sort of supporters. When I got on the Jaeger tour, it was just immediately, like, we came off stage and he was like, I didn't get to see some of what you guys did. What'd you do? And me and my old assistant explained. He's like, man, that's fucking wacky. I love that shit. Yeah, but that was part of my press kit for a long time, was, man, that's fucking wacky. Kerry fucking King. Yeah. And, but I mean, it's funny you mentioned Slipknot, because here's the thing. And I did an interview yesterday with a guy doing an underground radio show. Yeah. And they came up and I was like, yeah, I did the tour with them in 2004 and it was fantastic. And one of the things that really struck me about it was that even if they were at each other's throats, and, you know, there's very publicly and famously some bad blood between a few different members like that,
right,
they kept that contained and it was very positive around everybody else. And you'd say, like, oh, they need the money. They did that Jägermeister music tour, it turns out, because they had taken a merch deal. And the merch company basically said, you ain't sold enough of this shit. Get back on the road and move some units, because we advanced you all this money. They had they basically had to pay. That tour was, I mean, they had the new album and everything, but it was paying off in advance. So you, like, say, like, that tour was about money. But the very first day, I had a stupid little beanie and a pair of panties that said Freak on it with my little fork tongue logo that I wanted to sell on the tour to make a little extra money as an MC. I was talking about it to somebody else who wasn't the right person, just saying, yeah, we got to find out, blah, 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 on the first day. Paul, rest in peace, overhears me, comes over, grabs me, he's like, what are you doing? He goes, oh, you're the host, right? Because we hadn't even done a show yet. This is the very end of the tour. This was
just here for the show, or
who else would it be?
Well, no, but I mean, but you gotta understand, like, even like, think about it this way, like, he comes up from behind, I mean, like that. He doesn't know exactly who's talking. He's walking into a situation, and they're like, oh yeah, you're the host. But I mean, yeah, we hadn't had our official introduction as, like, I'm the MC, you're the headlining band. We hadn't even done that yet. It was his first day, and he goes, but he's just like, oh, you got merch? And I'm like, yeah, I got to figure out, you know, if we're gonna be able to put it out anywhere or anything like that. And he goes, come with me. Takes me right to his merch guy and goes, hey, this is the MC. What do you got? He goes, that goes up with ours. You sell it for him.
Oh, like, that's awesome.
Cool.
That's really cool.
Like, absolutely. And that's why, you know, I've always said, like, you know, I hear stories about, you know, some of these guys that I've toured with and whatnot, and I'm just like, you know, I don't know, but it doesn't jive with my experience.
Yeah,
like,
there's some good stuff there.
Corey Taylor and Kerry King, to me, are the perfect examples of how you're supposed to be when you manage to reach that level, because I've only seen them be kind. I mean, Kerry will be brutally honest, but he'll be honest. He won't fuck with you. He won't, like, I've seen, like, bands walk off, and it's the thing. He would go down and watch every single opening band. We'd get a local opener. Mm-hmm. Like, and I know a lot of other big headliners that didn't have time for the local openers.
Kerry, I most certainly would, right? Not watch them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they got 15-minute sets, so, you know, basically three songs, you know, maybe five if you had short songs like that.
Right.
He wasn't always able to watch their entire set, but he made a point of going down.
Checking out some of it.
And he made a point of, if he liked you, he told you. But I saw people come up to him and be like, hey, man, what'd you think? And he'd say something like, you definitely played a set.
Woo!
Yeah, he'd give, like, flat lines. But there's the thing, like, he's a no-bullshit guy. And
yeah, he just pawns his guitar the next day. Oh, it's over. I mean,
you know, some people use being brutally honest as just an excuse to be an asshole. Right. And he's not that guy.
Right. He's doing it.
Yeah, he's just straight up. He's just going to let you fucking know.
Yeah. You played.
He sounds a lot like me. I've noticed that about hearing about Corey.
Carrie
from Slayer.
Carrie from Slayer, Corey from Slipknot.
There you go.
And Stone Sour.
Well, man, we're at that point, that time right now. I do want to thank you for coming on the podcast.
I'm happy to be here.
Talking about Circus, Sideshow. And we got a little, I've always dreamed of it for like almost 6 years, just getting to know more about my best friend, the Lizard Man.
Yeah.
Well, how did I have to do it? Just on the podcast.
Yeah, this was the appropriate way.
This was just an excuse for us to bond, really.
Just to we talked about this like so many times.
Look, for those of you who weren't there, I saw it, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, we're gonna go bowling tonight. 24-hour Showplace Lanes. Before we go, do you have any last words regarding any Circus, Sideshow, or let's just talk about that beautiful skin you're walking around with.
Hey, yeah, that's right. I'm green, I'm wonderful, I'm beautiful, but there's a lot of other wonderful, beautiful freaks out there. So just go see something that isn't singing or dancing. Go stop watching TV. Go see a live goddamn show. Anything.
Go
support some live entertainment.
I've seen Lizard Man live. I could say you guys should definitely check him out. You can follow him on Twitter at LizardMan23. Is it 23 because you're a big Michael Jordan fan?
No, it's just it's more of a conspiracy thing. It's more William Burroughs.
I thought there was like 22 other lizard men.
Yeah, I get that with it. Well, the problem is the lizard man is always like a fantasy trope, like the India. So that's always taken everywhere already.
That's right.
So I was like, what am I going to do? I'm like, I'll put 23 after it because, fuck it.
But I am the lizard man. God.
Did you think about going with the lizard king for a little bit? You know, so I found that was taken.
Yeah, I know. It's fucking Jim Morrison, man.
You'll be in Australia in February.
Yep, at the Adelaide Fringe Fest and then at the Royal Easter Show in Sydney.
Hell yeah. And you could catch him anywhere with Ripley's, believe it or not.
Hey, you can go see me at any Ripley's in the world. They got a statue of me. It's even better. See, you can.
We have an icon on the podcast today.
The thing is, if you go see the statue, you can touch it and you can take a picture with it without it talking to you, which is two things you can't do with the real me.
There you go.
Nice. As for us, AJ, got anything before we head out?
You know I don't.
You're not doing the free pizza slice anymore?
Like I said,
no one's budging on that offer, right?
If you're there and there happens to be a pie that we're going to toss, you can call me out on that, and I'll give you one of those slices. Maybe I'll give you the entire thing. But,
are hungry students not a thing? Like, I spent almost all of my time in college standing behind pizza places waiting for the end of the night leftovers.
Yeah, if
I lived off that shit.
Come up to AJ.
People have too much goddamn pride in this city.
Austin's Pizza on Lamar.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Right. And then just drop me a line on Twitter. I'll say hi back. And that's pretty much the extent of that.
I will ignore you all on the internet.
I need your attention. Okay, so from a scale of 1 to 10 on the care meter, AJ, from 1 to 10, Circus, Sideshow, what do you give it? How many cares do you give it?
I'm going to give it an 8.
Woo! Are you just saying that because he's here and you're intimidated?
Nah, like I was like, this sounds cool.
All right, that's like the highest AJ's given.
I was
going to
say, I was surprised. I thought you were going to be like the Russian judge in the 80s. I thought I was looking at like a 3.5 or something.
Sounds like a rich and seedy history. You know,
that's there's a beautiful seediness to the history of Sideshow, especially when it gets to the carnival years.
Carnival.
Well, I'm going to give it a, and just understand before you came in and talked about it, I'm not a person who enjoys the circus. I actually hate it. I remember years ago, I went to the Ripley's, believe it or not, Like, yep. And I was like probably 18 or something, long time ago. And I had been when I was younger, and I thought this is like the greatest thing.
Yep.
But when I got there, I could not get over the smell of elephant shit everywhere. I was like, God damn, it stinks up in here. I remember one time my dad took me to a smaller one. It was a tent. Right. Just animals, just shit everywhere. And I was like, this place is awful. But there was no lizard, man. There was nobody doing cool sideshow stuff. It was just more typical animal tricks and shit.
Right.
And unless one of those animals are attacking, I'm not interested.
Right.
But you came in here and hit me with all this knowledge, so I'm gonna give it a 6 because
I'll take that.
Yeah, that's pretty high for me because, and I think it could even be going up because I'll tell you what, next time you're in town, I see you, I'm gonna come to a show.
Fantastic.
If I can get in for free.
Yeah, of course. Why not? what do you think? I'm trying to make money at this?
I don't have any. So, I know. You know.
Here's another quick Jim Rhodes story for you like that. I was talking to some kid when we were out giving out flyers for a show. And as soon as the kid walks away, and it bothered me. It bothers me in principle anyway, but I also know because Jim's kind of racist, it also definitely happened because the kid was black. But he comes over and he goes, what the fuck are you doing? He hasn't got any fucking money. He's not coming to our fucking show.
Wow.
And I'm like, dude, if he wants to come see the show and he can't afford the ticket, he's going on my fucking guest list because I want people who want to see the show to see the fucking show.
Yeah, right?
He goes, lizard, you beautiful bastard.
My icy heart with that story.
He just hated me more. I just hated him more.
Well, I give Jim Rose a 1. AJ?
Get some. Yeah, fucking 0.
He gets a 0. All right.
I don't know him, but he sounds like a real asshole.
Well, thanks so much again for listening, guys. We will see you next week. And Happy New Year.
Yeah, bye.
Woo!
Why should we care? Why should we care? Why should we care? International.